welcome all of you for this discussion about hospice care. And amazingly, today's topic is euthanasia. So I was talking about respite care. So then the patient is with the hospice and the caretakers are resting or rejuvenating, then they come back, respite, and then they come back and the patient again goes back to them, again they take over, and again some time. So that is something. Then something called as end of life care is there in the whole palliative care section. There is inpatient care, there is home care, there is respite care, and then there is end of life care. Obviously, the last point of the whole summit of the care is end of life care. It's a very big event, and there is pre-death care and death care and post-death care are the three parts of that, but very intense. The last culmination of all your services is in that end of life care. And what is remaining? Inpatient, home care, respite care, end of life care, and bereavement care. That means the patient dies, after that you keep giving care to the caretakers who are now aggrieved, who are now, you know, bereaving. It's called santvana. And you keep meeting them as per their need of meeting you. You keep meeting them up to 13 months after the departure of the beloved. Why 13 months? Because after 1 year, when that time comes closer, then they relive the whole event of death of the beloved. Oh, this day, you know, he had gasping. Oh, this day we took him to this place, and that day this happened, and then that particular day he passed away, and then this happened and that happened. So they cry like as if he is dying right now only. They relive the whole event. So they again need that counseling and support and emotional care and everything. And then after that, it kind of settled down. The next anniversary will not be as painful as the previous one. So this is all the types of care that we provide. And the most important and wonderful part of this whole story is this service crosses all barriers of language and color and race and caste and religion and, you know, economy. You name the difference, all difference falls when this care is in discussion or in action. It's a beautiful part of it. It's a most wonderful service that unites humanity in equal in strength. Most wonderful. They have so many stories to share with you. So I was just hearing one day that some of you were thinking, you know, the euthanasia should be introduced very soon because so much suffering is there in the life of people. So what all of you feel individually? If I were to ask you, what are your individual opinion about this subject of euthanasia? Before I give the spiritual understanding of this topic.
Familiar, they would be.
Euthanasia means mercy killing. Euthanasia means you feel that the patient is suffering so much now and there is no chance of survival. So better remove all the support services, that means ventilator and IV medications and dopamine and dopamine and all those things which are to keep up with your blood pressure and circulation, heart and brain and everything. It's just vegetable life. Money is being poured in, patient suffering is increasing. No hope of living and no hope of cure is there. So why just continue living like that, which is physically, emotionally, socially, financially draining and exhausting to all the parties involved? Why not end the life by taking a decision at one point of time? That's called mercy killing. You feel that it should be done. What are your reasons? Because maybe in those days when your mother was in this situation, maybe in those days the hospice care may not be available and the concept of palliation, that is comfort care, was not available.
But the hospice, 24 hours by her side.
Hospice?
Not hospice.
Huh.
But the whole family was by her side, but the pain was so unbearable.
Exactly. So I'm trying to tell you that hospice services, one of the major aspects of medical services in hospice is pain management. making them pain-free completely. See, as soon as you are pain-free, na, you can do many things in life, even although you are on deathbed. I'll give you one example. Very interesting one example I'll give you. We had gone to our one big center in ISKCON, which is in West Bengal. And we go there regularly for our services, medical camp. And that time, as soon as we reached there, we got a call of a very sick and very seriously ill devotee patient whose half face had a cauliflower growth of cancer. That means there was no face here, only cauliflower-like growth is seen, like this. And half face is like you and me. And he was in excruciating pain, and he was put in one room of, you know, called as a, you can say quarantine or whatever. It's individual room he was given, and some people were put for his care. But he was looking so horrible by even sight, you know, that devotees were getting scared to even go to serve him. And in the process, he didn't know he is looking so ghastly or whatever, but he is in pain. He is crying, shouting, yelling, and calling out in pain. And they would just, in scare, keep his plate and run away because they were not able to take that thing. They were not trained. And in that excruciating pain, for 15 days, this fellow was only shouting and crying and yelling, and he didn't sleep for 15 days in a row. Can you imagine? In a row, 15 days, he could not sleep a second also. He was so much in pain. So as soon as we were called, the first thing he told us that, doctor, please give me medicine to die immediately. I want to die immediately. I don't want to live a moment more in this pain. And because somehow, by the mercy of the Lord, we were trained into this. So first thing is we put him into a regimen of pain management. As soon as his pain became reduced, the first thing that happened, he went to sleep. Because his sleep was pending. No? So as soon as the pain, which was causing him not to sleep, reduced, first thing he went to sleep. And he slept for about 12 to 15 hours. And next day, the first service that we have in temple is at 4:30 in the morning. And the next day, the doctor, like me and the doctor, they both were there in their service in the morning, and we were praying to the Lord, and we saw him next to us standing. And he told in the middle of the service in the morning, I don't want to die now. I want to prepare for my death and then die. Why he was feeling like dying? Because he was in so much pain. He can't think anything but the pain. But as soon as he was given a proper medication, which made him first of all free of pain, at least at that moment, which made him sleep well, and as soon as he slept well, his mind was like, wow, if I'm going to die, I don't want to die like this in yelling and crying and painful condition. I want to die in a pain-free, happy condition. And everybody has a possibility of dying in a pain-free, happy condition. It's a misnomer that death has to be painful. Death is a dreadful event. Death is an event to be, you know, cry for or feel sorry for, feel pity for the person who's dying. It's a very painful event. Nobody wants it. It's not like that. The way we celebrate birth, we can celebrate death also. It's a festival, but it has to be converted into festival medically, psychologically, emotionally, socially, financially, and spiritually. Then the whole event, by the grace of all of you who are involved in this, the aim should be that I want to make him feel happy, pain-free, solve all his issues, maybe of his property, of his division, of saying sorry to you, thank you to you, you know, and maybe I want to donate to this cow shed, I want to donate to this anath ashram, I want to donate for these ladies who are widows, or I want to give my daughter some big chunk of money, I want to give my grandson something, and say thank you, sorry, all these things, and everything what I wished I could, I would do, like I would like to do, and what I can do, I have done. Now, I am free. I have no regrets. I have nothing to say sorry for. I am now clean slated. And now I can actually prepare for the inevitable, which is not avoidable, right? And then please help me. So spiritual people will come and help him. How to prepare for that. And now happily to face death as you have taken birth, how you can happily go in the transition of changing your body and going to the next journey. That is hospice. So, all of you are available, but you are there for emotional support. But medically, she needed badly the pain support. If she would have got that, now she would never tell you, throw me out of the fourth floor. She would say, let me prepare, pray for me. Oh, you come and read for me. you come and sing the hymn for me. Let call the spiritual priest to guide me, to bless me, to pray for me. She would say so many things,
that
but in
was
pain. Because hospice
kind of
concept is not even yet known to many of the doctors in India. I interview doctors here and I just casually ask them, do you know hospice? They say, I don't know. Because it's not a subject to be taught in the colleges these days. It's a new branch and not developed in India so much. It's not even covered by insurance. Nobody accepts it as a bona fide. 110 years old only. It began in UK. Not aware.
In India.
And even abroad also, by the way.
UK
it is mostly aware. No, it started in India, but it's not, awareness is not there. So, what is their challenge, you know? Huh?
All the hospitals?
No. Only, you can't even count in fingers. Both hands will not be covered if you start counting. Less than.
In the city of India, it has already started long back, more than 10, 20 years, in the state of Kerala. There are hospitals which are established. And then after that, it has come to Tata Memorial in Mumbai. But then again, we are very way behind.
One is in Pune, one in Calcutta, bank somewhere like that. Only few, and plus they are not that advanced in understanding also. So any palliative care center, when you start, the major challenge is half is to educate people about it. It's like you are bringing new product in the market. First you tell what the product is, and then you give the care to people. So their half the way is always advertising or inquiring people, educating them about hospice, what is hospice, what is the difference between hospice and hospital, and what happens here, what happens there, what happens which is not happening here, happenings over here. All has to be told to people. What are the stages, what kind of care we give, and what are the types of care that we give, what is your role, what is his role, what is her role, how to work in the union of the understanding of the whole thing. So it's a huge science, you know. And it's a, I would say, more than a science and specialized branch, it's a mindset, more than that. Mindset, when allopathy or any other pathy may feel ki abhi aap usko le jao ghar pe, abhi kuch nahi kar sakte, abhi bhagwan se prarthna karo. This is what was usually told, ki now nothing can do a work, only prayers will work, you take him home. And from there our work starts, a huge amount of work starts from there. When doctors are given you up, ki hum log kuch nahi kar sakte, that is where we take over and start our services, which are like 24/7 till the patient dies. And amazingly, there's so much work. They are overloaded already. So much work is there because there are emotional needs, there are physical needs, there are psychological needs, there are financial needs, many social needs, and over and above spiritual needs. So many questions asked, so many pains, so many agonies, and all is hospice. All are addressed by hospice. And by the way, if you understand, hospice is medical help to the dying person. I would say it's only 10%. It's only 10%. Rest all huge things are social, emotional, financial, will, legal also. The will making, actual execution of will, final rights. Then there are spiritual needs. After all you do, physical, mental, social and financial help, then the soul is hankering for the Lord. How to nourish the soul to reach the Lord. So next day the patient said, ki, I don't want to die like this, I want to prepare. So then we had a proper meeting with him, and then we made whole the program for him. What all things are pending that he wants to do, what all things are pending medically, what all things he desires to do, what he can do, what he cannot do, counseling, preparing him, preparing relatives, everything was done. And he passed away in the same thing, but he passed away in a different way. Maybe he could have jumped from the fifth floor of that building to end his life. But that kind of death doesn't help you to reach your destiny. It's the worst kind of thing what you can ever do. So whether it is euthanasia, that you are thinking that I plug you off, and then you pass away, or I end myself, I jump from fifth floor. Maybe I just take all the wipes off and I'll jump from fifth floor, I can't bear the pain anymore. So you said you believe in it. Who else is there who feels that, yeah, it should be done? One of the ways of helping people is just end it voluntarily, by choice.
Passive euthanasia.
Passive.
Even
What is the meaning of passive euthanasia? He is kind of not able to tell you. Maybe he is in coma, and you can see him suffering, and you know, you feel that okay, enough of enough, and end it. Yeah. What is your opinion? No, you can have a different opinion. There's no problem. Nothing is wrong or right here. We are talking from our perspective, what we perceive in a particular way, and I'm sure all these feelings are based on a compassionate approach. Huh? I feel there's a lot of comparison between this and abortion. When people decide to, you know, make the medically termination of pregnancy, so some people feel financial reason is there. Some people feel that already 4 children, you know, 5th children, a child I don't want. Somebody may say I have a career to make, I can't have a child now. Or somebody may say it's too early for me to have a child. I have just married, I am not yet settled down in my house. Or somebody may say it's a rape baby, we don't want to have inauspicious baby. Or somebody may say the baby has congenital anomalies. So what is the use of keeping such a baby? I just got a phone call yesterday. The baby in the brain, in the womb has no brain. It's called as anencephaly. The brain is, only the skull is there, inside there is no brain. By some defect that comes up. So the doctor is telling abort the baby immediately. Because it's going to die either inside or outside very soon. Why keep the baby? So people have various kinds of reason for doing the same thing. But in all the stories of why I just take you a little away from discussion of euthanasia, all people who come for doing medical termination of pregnancy, all of them are only thinking from their point of view. But nobody thinks from the baby's point of view. If you were able to talk to the baby, okay, baby, what is your thought? You are a rape baby. You are a congenitally animalistic baby. You are a baby unwanted because of career, because of financial reasons, because of number of children, because of you are a female baby, whatever. What do you think? You want to die? So baby will say, no, madam, I don't want to die. Never. If there is a rape case, baby will say, so what is my fault? Hang them and give me life. Why are you hanging me first before hanging anybody else? It's a medical condition. So I'm going to come. That is why today we are sitting over here to explain to you. So another reason is that why we are all today here. Because our dear mothers never chose to abort us. For whatever reason they had. I'm 8th baby in my house. 8th pregnancy, 8th baby. My mother was 35, father was 42. Very poor man, shopkeeper, many children at home to get educated and fed food and all. But my mother in a dignified way allowed me to take birth, and today I am in front of you. And I think there is some value to the life that we have, and we are doing so much wonderful things that we can do just because we are alive today. We were given life. And when the life is ended in between, we don't know what the person could have done after taking birth. So, most people on the grounds of compassion, see, when you think, oh, euthanasia should be adopted, you're not cruel. Nobody is cruel here. When you think, you feel very bad for the person who is suffering, and you cannot tolerate him suffering and seeing him suffering and tolerate him who is tolerating that all suffering. So you feel like, God, can it be ended very soon? You know, and still it's going on maybe. You want it to be ended yesterday, but it's still going on for 8 days more of that. But whatever I'm going to speak now is from spiritual angle number one, and it may not be acceptable to your thinking or your understanding or your belief, whatever you have, but nonetheless I'll put forward and we can discuss it. Every living entity takes birth with a set of karma, you can say, which he or she has to go through his life, and there is no a discount about it, by the way. All of us are different. All of us are different, born in different families. Some are in different financially, some are different educationally, some are different from physical point of view, beauty point of view, health point of view, language point of view, nationality point of view. We are different and we have a different set of things in life which we have to go through inevitably. And everything has a connection. Why I am like this today, why I go through XYZ today, is there some connection behind it. I may not know everything in detail, why today's 104 fever is there to me, which karma is connecting to that. I may not be able to tell that. But without anything behind, I cannot suffer or enjoy. Even enjoyment, why today I got increment of 1,000 rupees this year? What was the benefit, what was the connection of my karma? Maybe immediate last year I worked hard, or my karma takes me to take birth in Ambani's family. Straight from birth only I am millionaire and trillionaire. Who decides that? Is the karma that we bring in. And when we come in with some karma, there is some purpose behind it. That Lord wants you, free you of all the bondages, good and bad. Suffering also has to begin and end, and happiness also has to begin and end sometime. Both things have begin and end, right? Do you believe in that? Happiness also doesn't have permanent existence here. Happiness also begins, happiness ends. Short-lived, long-lived, but it has to end some point. So life also is a calculation by the Lord to give you the suffering and enjoyment that you deserve through your karma. And to that, a time period is allocated. It's not that ki, my Lord, do one thing, no, why to have 70 years? Just club it, like make it concentrated and give it in 10 years. And I don't want to live more than 10 years, and I am prepared to undergo all happiness and sorrow in 10 years' time. I am very strong. But that you can't expect like that to happen. It will have its own course of time. Bolte na ki, samay se pehle aur bhagya se zyada. Kabhi kisi ko nahi milta. Happiness bhi nahi, sorrow bhi nahi. Kal ka happiness and kal ka sorrow, you can't borrow it today. It will always remain wherever it is, and whenever it has to come, it will come that time only. You cannot say ki, whatever sorrow I am going to get after my marriage and whatever happiness I am going to get after marriage, give me today only, all things together. You cannot get that. Time has to come, and in at right time it will fructify and it will be given to you. It's like you can't expect a baby, you have a connection and tomorrow the baby should be born. It will take 9 months. It's a law of nature. So like that, when you see people suffering like this, no? There's a purpose behind it, and there's a reason behind it. And Lord has a perfect plan to end the suffering of a person. And when you and me feel that it should be ending now, not tomorrow, we can't see it anymore, we can't tolerate seeing him suffering anymore. So all of us are kind. But higher understanding, I think, is that Lord has decided the time. And if we feel that today we end it, and there is some set of karma remaining for him to suffer, by ending it, two things happen. That we are intervening in the laws of nature, laws of God. We are intervening, huh? Like I have 10 hours more to go in this life, but we are all choosing that it should be ended now only. So what about those suffering which I am going to suffered by me in the next 10 hours? Those are not going to be pardoned for me. I will be taking birth again to suffer those, whatever stock of karma is there. Plus, so there are two things involved in this. One is my interference in the laws of God. So I will be punished for that separately. I incur karma in taking that decision of intervening or interfering with the laws of God. God has a perfect plan for everybody. When to bring him in, when to bring him out. And I think I know better than him. So I am incurring another activity in that. And I will be also going through the reaction of the activity in my life. And that person is not going to be saved by any way. Please understand. That person will not be getting any discount or any concession, anyways, by doing this. He will again come back and finish his quota. For that matter, nobody will be pardoned for anything. Only when the Supreme Lord comes in picture and he decides, okay, discount, then only we can get discount. But no other demigods or no other small gods, wherever we worship in, they don't have any authority of interfering with anybody's karma and time. Only one, the Supreme Lord, whom we call Allah or Jehovah or maybe Sri Krishna, maybe Ram, but that personality, who may be named as anything, but that Supreme Personality, when he decides, okay, I decide to give discount, then he can be given discount. Nobody has the authority to do that. So in a way, euthanasia is another huge burden of karma added in your life. Because number one, we should know that it doesn't serve the patient at all. At all. It remains like 90 reactions have been given to this person and at 85th you have interfered. So 5 valves is remaining, it will be given to him some other time. And now you ask me a question about that brain, that baby with no brain, right? Again, here the comes the understanding of value of human life. Human life is very, 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 very precious. It cannot be compared with any other life of maybe elephants or tiger or any other stronger animal or a intelligent animal or whatever it may be. Physically, maybe monkeys are more athletic than we are and tiger is more strong than we are. Elephant is huge, bigger than I am. And they do many more things than I can do. But still, human life is something extraordinary. Only in this human life, we are given the power to understand the Lord. And in no other life. We may be having 50 kinds of religions in to understand God. But only we, as human beings, have an understanding of our own, how to approach Him. Right? A cat and dog cannot have an approach to God and realize God and you know, go back to God. They have to become human beings in the course of evolution of the soul. And when in human being only they can practice spirituality and connect to God and go back to God. So now we come to a concept called as human time. All of you are now enjoying human time. And human time has a great potential in the process of understanding God. And no other time in any other animals or insects or any other species life has that potential to understand God. So even though the brain is not there, but you have the vehicle of human body. That human body vehicle has a software to understand God and to pursue spirituality like nobody else. So even in the womb, doctors will tell you that it will die in 2 months. But those 2 months in the womb of a sensible human mother, he can receive lot of spirituality, lot of spiritual nourishment, and that may be the only shortest period of life he can have, and we can die in the womb only. But the mother is highly spiritual and prayerful, and she chants and she prays and she does all spiritual activities nourishing the child. Because all of you know na, that child in the womb is highly receptive for so many things. You can teach him mathematics, you can teach him songs, you can coach him, you can counsel him, you can make him inspired to become a lieutenant general in the army also. You can teach him tables. It's all scientifically proved. So don't think that only human being has to come out of the womb and then only you are start training him. He has already 90% of his personality is formed in the womb only. By constant association of mother, first number one, and all those close to mother in the family, all their voices he has heard, all talks he has heard, all their level of consciousness he has gone through, and he has picked up 90% of his character in the womb only. Remaining in first 6 months. And the remaining is only the painting, finally. You paint the house. Only finally. Everything is made. All structure, strength and pillars and rooms and divisions. Everything is made. All pipelines, everything. Only last is painting. That is 6 years onwards. And that we think is a great education. That admission in medicine and this and that. But inner structure, inner caliber of the character is already developed fully. And that can't be changed afterwards. Unless some miracle happens in life. So those 2 months, if the mother is properly guided by some spiritual people, then those 2 months are enough for the child to receive whatever he is supposed to receive. If Lord has decided my life in the womb only till 5th month of pregnancy, it's perfect from the spiritual point of view. What I am supposed to do in that 5 months is my duty as a mother or a father. So we should not look at life as congenitally abnormality, abnormal life. No legs and no hands only. Many people are born, heart in the different direction. Or there is no heart only sometimes, there is no liver only. There are so many kinds of congenital abnormalities that we see. But as long as they are in human body, with all the defects and abnormality, human body has that potential to connect with God. And that potential must be awarded in reality to the soul by the mother and the dear ones. When you take a decision of abortion, that means I am again interfering in the laws of God. That this soul is supposed to live in the womb for 5 months, I am ending it in the 2nd month only. What about the 3 months precious which you are nourished the child in the womb and make him fulfill the goal of his own life and the journey towards God? Because everything ultimately is journey towards God. maybe many lifetime, maybe one lifetime, all of us are journeying towards the lotus feet of the Lord to receive permanent shelter, free from suffering, free from birth and death, free from all negative things in the world. We all are journeying. Rather, we are supposed to journey towards the feet of the Lord. So, the temporary understanding of suffering and pain and happiness is always, always temporary only. It never becomes long term. So, I would say it would be humility on our part to allow the life to live till it is supposed to live. When time comes, even if you want it to extend, you can't extend it. Many times you want, no? I wish he could have got 10 days more, or I wish she could have got 5 days more, I could have got 10 days more. But nobody can prepone it by one day, nobody can postpone by one day. And I may feel I am very advanced scientifically and medically, I am a doctor and I feel it should be done legally now. Sunil Shetty is telling in television that if my mother is suffering, I feel it should be legalized now. Some countries have done it, some countries are in thinking process, some countries are proposing for it. But if you see from spiritual point of view and see from the Lord's point of view, He has a best plan for everybody of us, which you and me will not be able to understand right now with our limited understanding of knowledge of medicine and knowledge of spirituality also. And no one knows from where soul is coming, soul is going, what is the role of the soul, what is the destiny for the soul, what is in store for the soul. Nobody knows. I have to only see that I am not the person to give life. Only He can give life. That's why He can give life, only He can take the life. I am only assistant here in His divine, wonderful plan for each and every soul who comes in contact with me. My duty is to serve Him, to help Him, to connect with Him in the best possible way, in the given conditions of his life. Whether it is cancer, whether it is no cancer, whether it is full health, in whatever conditions, whoever comes in contact with me, my duty is to inspire them to be successful on the path towards the feet of the Lord, to serve Him and to be with Him. So we can see what we can do to alleviate the misery and how we can reduce it. We can just ponder on that, have 50 meetings to do that. But thought of ending the life because of our inability to bear the pain is interference in the loving arrangement of the Lord, what Lord has done for him. That is why spirituality is very important. Because once you become spiritual, immediately your understanding changes of everything. You look at the same thing from a different angle altogether. The best angle, rather, I would say. The highest angle the Lord, whatever vision Lord has, it has to be highest. No, I cannot claim that my vision is higher than Lord's vision. So when I think that, oh, I should immediately adopt euthanasia in this case, that means I am actually saying that I know more than God. I am actually saying I am actually more compassionate than God. What God is doing, He is suffering so much, God should be more compassionate and end His life now. That means I think and I claim that I am actually more compassionate than God also. And I think I know more than God also, and I think I am the controller. The last thing is that I am, because I now in this situation, Bhaktivedanta Hospital, in this ICU and in this hospice team, I am the decision maker. So I am more in power here than Lord. So I take a decision, take off all the wires and tubes and let him die. So we may think I am very compassionate, I am very kind, I am just so kind that I, you know. But by our so-called kindness, out of ignorance, we are not actually ending his misery at all. In fact, they remain the same. And we add miseries for ourselves because of interfering in between. This is what spirituality teaches us. The highest point of understanding that we respect life and let God take over it, as already He is in control. We assist completely by our surrender, by our humility, to accept it as it is. And only we ask one thing, what can I do? What can I do? Can I sing a prayer? Can I say something? Can I give some painkiller medicine? Can I do something to alleviate his pain physically, mentally, socially, spiritually, financially, wherever way? There are hospices in America where a guitar player comes and plays a symphony, plays some tune. The patient says, I love guitar. Anybody can come and play. So he comes and plays. fixed amount, fixed hour, fixed in a week, he comes and plays free of charge. So that much period of time, I can reduce your misery for some time. I can make you forget your misery and you can be happy in something. I'll tell you a story which will take you above your pain and make you enjoy for a while. So I will do my part. I may have a capacity to do that part, but I will try to fit in the whole setup. I don't claim anywhere that I'm a controller. I don't claim anywhere that I'm a great personality. I can reduce your pain. There's no pride anywhere. It's only mood of humble service. Whatever God has given me, some expertise, some skill, I want to use it. In any way, if I can help you in reducing your pain, I'll be happy. If any way I can increase your happiness by some way, I'll be very happy. That is only my humble approach. And that is why we don't believe in euthanasia. Because of a holistic approach.
The she approach. Did not even have pain.
Exactly.
She was managed so well. That was the only and first patient I have seen. And I thought that there is a hope. I did not know all this process.
There is physical. There are so many things in physical. There are so many things in psychological. There are so many things in social. There are so many things in legal things that we do for the patient. There are so many things in financial things that we do for the patient. Even there is a concept of providing home health aids. Like for example, you are now about to be discharged at home and there is nobody at home. So home health aids, whether in the form of volunteers or employed, even those are arranged by the hospice team. The social worker will arrange that. The chaplain will come and give some guidance regularly to the family members, to the patient. And you know, all these people, they work together. They are not independently giving chaplaincy services in social services. They are all in touch with one another. That's called IDT. Interdisciplinary team. They meet regularly for their patients one by one. Patient number one, all of you defined. Second, patient number two, patient number three, patient number four. And they know, the chaplain knows right now what kind of help he has received. The health social worker will know how many summons he has received. Who is doing prayer for him. Even the death event is planned. They are called as advanced directives. The patient is made fully aware. Okay, he will say, ki, when I die, na, I want this friend of mine to be with me. I want my guru with me. I want my father from church with me. I want this friend of mine and this doctor and this nurse. He will decide everything. This is my money for that, budget for that. I want to be buried in this particular cemetery. I want to be burnt in that place. My ash should be put in this river. All can be defined by him. And fully his desire. So much his planning is there in that. And you know, even I today, if you ask me, na, I have my death plan. I want to die in a particular way and I want to put my ash here. I want to get burnt over here. Everything is in my mind. And I'm going to write it down and tell my reliable friend to be executed for that. And I want it all to be executed. I'll fund for that. I'll keep the fund aside for that. So even after my death, everything will be taken care. How I want to take care of my people who are going to leave behind me, that also can be planned. Everything can be executed very beautifully. And with all this settled down, I am now ready to go. In a way I have planned to go. And that can be given, all the service can be given to the person by the great compassionate hospice team. Their role is to help that person to go with dignity, with happiness, with satisfaction. This he deserves. He deserves all that because nobody is caring for that. He's not getting it. The whole concept here in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, how it came up, in 93, one lady, great devotee of Lord Krishna, she came to Vrindavan to die as her last wish. And she got a tremendous spiritual support, what she desired and what she deserved. Both things were available to her. But unfortunately, there was no medical facility. And she suffered a lot in the medical way. In the medical field, there was no painkiller, no concept, no hospitals, no clinics, nobody who understood anything of the, you know, pain is a very deep subject in medicine. And how to control pain is a big science. It's not just giving analgesics like that. There's big science is there for that. We learnt in the hospice palliative care medicine. So nothing was there. So she died in a very blissful spiritual situation. But she said that there should be a back to God clinic in Vrindavan. She said back to Godhead, right, rather. That means there should be a clinic in Vrindavan where there is a team who assists you medically, physically, socially, financially, spiritually, socially, fully to help you to go back to God. And as a statement of hers before death, one of the Swamijis were meditating on this for so many years. Till 2006, he was meditating. Kaisa karna hai usko? And by the time our hospital came up and the team of doctors came up, so one day he approached us, ki, this is the concept that she has told us and I am contemplating for so many years. Now I can see through you there is a hope for this concept to be realized. Can you all take it up? And we thought it's a blessing of the Lord on us. It's a new thing is coming up, wonderful service. So we took it over immediately and we built that hospice in Vrindavan. And now so many devotees are coming there and under our care they are leaving their bodies. Then we thought, why not in Bhaktivedanta Hospital also? So we got these people, they all joined here nicely and we developed a department. It is not an earmarked place in the hospital that this is hospice, but wherever the patient goes, that becomes hospice. And tomorrow maybe the new building will have a 6-bedded beautiful hospice. That's our dream, that we will work for it and get it done over here. Then it is established here also. The major work is done by the volunteers like all of you who are saying, I want to help. So whatever capacity and capability and knowledge you have, you can do your part, and doctors will do their part, and nursing will do their part, and law will do their part, and the social worker will come in picture and raise money and raise help. So much you can do, so much. Even combing the hair of the lady, in a regular way, and washing and nicely oiling and nicely plaiting, it's a wonderful service. The patient feels so much cared for. A simple thing, mopping on the tabletop of kitchen of that house and putting a flower pot, vase, cutting nails, so many things are there. Little things, but there is an array of things we can do. Yeah. I'll tell you what we can do is, 70-year-old, completely white hair American lady, retired, maybe 75 or 80, I think. What is her duty? She comes some fixed days by her own car, by her own petrol or gas. And she will punch in the card as a volunteer also, fixed time. And in those hours, her duty is to take the patient, put her in car and take the patient to the park and spend time with the patient and talk nice things, discuss things and make her very happy, and then bring her back and take another patient, and again whatever he wants to go to, take that patient, spend time, and in 3 hours she will do 3 patients and she will go back in her own car home. Another one will come, he will not be a patient, he will just go to the reception of the hospice in that stipulated 3 voluntary hours, and he will put the papers together and organize it nicely and put it in the shelf nicely for the nurses to work properly. All the different papers they are generated today, she will gather it and nicely order it and put in the file and nicely keep it. No, in the hospice America. Yeah. I'm saying what kind of array of volunteer service one can do. Unimaginable. Exactly. And most of the times we ask them, what now you would like to do? You will say, kuch sunna hai mujhe, aap padh ke sunao. Then we do that. Do the needful rather than imposing our so called good service to on them. Ask them what they want to do. Tell you something. Both are the needs to be fulfilled. So now with my brief talk, what do you think about euthanasia? DNR means do not resuscitate. Do not resuscitate means resuscitation is a process where you do something last moment when the patient is dying. You give shocks, you give adrenaline, intracardiac, you give dopamine, dopamine, whatever. It's like a last effort to bring the life back. Your heart is stopped. You give shock to revive the heart. And then you give mouth to mouth breathing. You give oxygen. You give so many things. It's called as do not resuscitate. That means
R-E-S-C-U-S-I-T-A-T-E.
CITATE. There's a medical terminology.
DNR.
Resuscitation means the final effort to revive life before departure. And CPR means cardio pulmonary resuscitation. That means we give mouth to mouth breathing and we do so many things, pumping and mouth to mouth breathing, and before we reach the hospital we can keep doing this. So at one point of time we take a consent that DNR, do not resuscitate. Patient is unconscious, relatives, doctors come together and say he is not going to live more than 3-4 hours. That time they give the consent and we take out the tubes. Still patients sometimes live for 6-7 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours also. Now why do we do that? Because when patients are under too many tubings and patients are under so many ventilator or so many machines, there's a great suffering. And by removing those things, his last 2-3 hours of going away is not artificially in pain because of all the tubings. He's off everything and he's only receiving prayers and mercy and chanting and good wishes. Everybody is praying around him. All the people who want to be there for the event, they can be brought together. He can be moved from ICU setup, which is very sterilized and very limited. He can be brought out of that and brought to a room where everybody can enter. There's no more fear of infection because anyway he is on the way out. So all that ICU rules, regulations and restrictions and limitations can be finished. And what we do is we take him out of the ICU and put him in a deluxe room. Most times we give that room free of charge. So it's only a matter of 2-3 hours. And then we bring in everybody. Kisko milna hai usko? Hey, bahar sab log khade, they're trying to rush inside. Everybody, welcome, please come in. All the people who are hospice people, they also come in. All the spiritual care people, they also come in. Everybody arranges themselves. And a team here praying, singing prayers. Team here reading from scriptures, what is supposed to be read that time. And all the relatives come and they give holy waters and they give holy leaf. And they also participate in the process and they be there. And they offer their heartfelt prayers for the departing soul. And everybody feels satisfied that I did my part. Whatever little part I could do, I did my part. And I was there to do that. I'm so happy that I was there. I'm happy that I was allowed to be there. Not that ICU didn't allow me to come. Yeah, there was arrangement here where we could all be there and, you know, express our heart and emotions and prayers and be there to say final farewell to the person. It's a great thing, you know. You feel, oh, I missed it. Array, I just came in and before that in 5 minutes he died. You feel so bad. I could have been... Here also,
was done in a very
dignified way.
Yes.
I would say,
yes.
Yeah, come in. Dignity is one of the most important target of hospice services. How to keep the dignity of the person on and intact till the last moment of life. Because most people who are in hospice care, they feel worthless, they feel useless, they feel unwanted, they feel burdensome to everybody else. And everybody together has to make them feel, no, we love you, we want you. Don't think that we don't care for you. You are a burden and it's too much for us to go through all the expenses and time, you know, so, what you are taking from us. No, we feel we love you and we will miss you after you go. Rather, we'll take care of ourselves after you go, but we will miss you. Don't think you are just unwanted and burdensome to us. So that dignity feeling is extremely important. Whether it's medical or spiritual or whatever is maybe the case. Come. So one of the target of hospice care is dignity. And you know, imagine ourselves, if we are in that condition of, you know, feeling that, oh, my wife now looks like too much burdened by me. Oh, my son now looks like financially totally exhausted and he's waiting, counting days for me to go. If that feeling is given to me, I want to die yesterday, not today. I pray to God. If you make any patient pray to God to die yesterday, that means our hospice service has failed. You should be given a feeling that life is so beautiful. There are so many nice people in this world who are taking care of me. I wish I can live with them longer, even in this condition. Because in this condition has given me the association of so many nice people in the world, which I never met before. You should never think that I want to die yesterday. And then, if we can embrace the death with great, you know, gratitude, another thing that we aim at is gratitude. The patient should feel gratitude towards what he has received and towards God. He should not feel that God was cruel with me, you know, my father was cruel with me, doctors are more cruel than my parents with me. They should feel grateful. If he is grateful, he will not be angry. If he is grateful, he will be humble. And he'll be able to accept everything that God is giving him in life. So hospice is not only medical and pain management and everything. Hospice is very subtle and very deep. In short, hospice is meant to make death as a festival of celebration. Utsav. Utsav kehte hai usko. Turn the death event into a utsav, into a festival. And that all of you can do. He is helpless. He can't do anything for himself. All of us can make it into a festival for him. And when that festival, then there will be union with God. When there is pain, when there is worthlessness, there is frustration, there is anger, there is prayer to die yesterday, all that will not help him to unite with God. He has to also make it in such a way that he should feel whatever happened is by the will of the Lord. And I surrender to the will of the Lord. If it was pain, it was fine. If it is happiness, it was fine. Everything was fine. And if he is in that consciousness, then only he is fit to meet the Lord. If he is not grateful, then he feels, no, it's not fine. What happened with me was not fine. So he'll come back again in this world to suffer again. So our aim is to make him pain-free, make him all his logistics, thank you, sorry, fulfilled, and then finally make him happily and gratefully unite with the Lord. That's our job. So as patient goes nearer to death, the spiritual work goes on increasing. And medical work remains steady and on plateau level. And spiritual work goes on increasing. More and more intense it becomes. Now the actual meeting of the Lord is going to come up. Whether he is going to miss the boat or he is going to meet the Lord, that's all up to you and all of us. So thank you very much. Huh? Hare Krishna.